Our next speaker is Christina Abraham. She's the Civil Rights Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations in Chicago. She's also a member of the Advisory Board for the Chicago Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights. Christina Abraham.
So I've been asked to come and speak about what I've seen as an attorney working with CARE Chicago that has been directed at the Arab and Muslim community in recent years. And so what I'll say is that there are a lot of similarities in what's happening to your group and what's happening to the Arab and Muslim community, in that there is a let's first start out by saying that the FBI has basically two functions. One is to actually be enforcers of the law and to prevent and crimes and to catch criminals when actual crimes have occurred. And the other has, and we've seen this happen during the Red Scare, during the Cold War, and you see it happening now post 9/11, is it's an intelligence gathering agency. And what that means is that it's been commissioned to basically gather information about the doings and the actions and the beliefs and the opinions of regular people. So not necessarily people who are engaged in criminal activity or who have any intention of being engaged in any criminal activity. So what we see happening, I think, with Arabs and Muslims a lot is that there is a, I would call it a fear of their growing influence in American society. They came here like everybody else as immigrants mostly, and they have a very specific interest in U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, namely when it comes to the Israel-Palestine conflict and in wars, for example, the invasion of Iraq, and other less obvious things that happen in the Middle East that the U.S. is directly involved in. And so if you have a community that's growing in population and in stature, what's going to happen to U.S. foreign policy, for example, with the Israel-Palestine conflict, if Arab Americans, for example, grow in their influence here and are able to actually influence what happens abroad? It's a very scary thing, I think, for the establishment. It is something that worries them, because if they have to deal with, you know, a growing lobby, for example, that is pro-Palestinian, then what's going to happen to their friend Israel? What's going to happen to what they want to do in Iraq? What's going to happen to what they want to do all across the Middle East, in Syria and Afghanistan and so on? And so what we see happening here, I think, is a movement to sort of quell or stifle any kind of speech, any kind of activism here on the part of Arab and Muslims. And you see that, I think, in very large actions. You see that with the prosecutions of, for example, Samuel Arian or Mohammed Salah, or in the prosecution of the Holy Land Foundation case. And you see that, I think, in sort of little ways. You see that when the FBI approaches people for these so-called voluntary interviews and involves itself in other aspects of the person's life. So, for example, what I mean by that is we've had a lot of cases where the FBI has approached constituents, and these are people who are, you know, regular people. They go to mosque, or they go, you know, they're active in their communities, and they get approached by the FBI, and the FBI says to them, "We just want to talk to you. We're trying to get to know your community." And to be honest with you, a lot of people, you would be shocked at how many people go and they'll just talk to the FBI. Because they don't know, one, they don't know that they necessarily have a right to an attorney or have a right to say no and decline the interview. And two, because their attitude is, "I'm not doing anything wrong, I have nothing to hide, and therefore I want to show them that I have nothing to hide, and so I'm just going to talk to them." And what ends up happening is, I've had a number of conversations with community members, and most of the time, when we find out that it's a voluntary interview, we'll tell people, "You can say no, and I suggest you do say no." Some people don't say no still, and it's their choice. And so they go ahead and they go through the interview, and they, you know, they have a right to have an attorney present. And so we're there. So we're there as witnesses to what questions are asked specifically. And it's actually shocking how many questions are asked that relate specifically to these people's First Amendment rights. "What's your opinion of the war in Iraq?" What's your opinion on U.S. foreign policy? What do you think of George W. Bush? I mean, these are questions that I get asked. What this has to do with a criminal investigation or potential criminal activity is beyond me. But these are questions that actually get asked. And, you know, if you have a person who has been active in the community and vocal about their opposition to, you know, U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East, then you have a situation where somebody can espouse an opinion, an idea that can give the agent reasonable suspicion, sufficient enough under the Patriot Act, so that they can get tapped or placed under further surveillance. And so this is a situation we see happening on the ground. What else do we see? We see these prosecutions of bigger names, Muslims and Arabs. During the Holy Land Foundation case, for example, there were over 300 individuals and organizations that were publicly listed as unindicted co-conspirators in that case. What's an unindicted co-conspirator? Well, you know, people latch onto the word co-conspirator. It's actually not an allegation of any criminal wrongdoing. Emphasis on the word unindicted. Unindicted because there was not enough evidence to charge the person, much less bring them to trial and convict them under any sort of criminal, any kind of criminal action, much less terrorism-related ones. But what do they do? It's the unindicted co-conspirator lists are traditionally used by prosecutors to sort of circumvent federal rules of evidence and specifically hearsay laws. Hearsay rules are basically rules that say you can't use he said, she said information. So that's something that the courts have sort of stuck to, and there are very few exceptions to that rule. And so prosecutors, in order to sort of get around that rule that they can't use he said, she said evidence, is that they list these unindicted co-conspirators. They'll say that, you know, these people were somehow involved and there's no burden of proof on their part to establish the involvement. There really isn't anything specific they have to say. They compile a list and that's about it. And these lists are generally held private. They are not released publicly at all, traditionally. In this case, this list of over 300 Arab and Muslim activists and organizations was publicly released. And once in today's society, once information is publicly released, that's the end of it. It's on the internet, it follows the person forever. And so what you saw happening was organizations like the one that I'm from, CARE, and organizations like the Islamic Society of North America and other, you know, very prominent organizations that have been very mainstream for decades were listed as unindicted co-conspirators, and it followed them wherever they went. And it affected the amount of contributions they were receiving from their constituents. Nobody wants to donate to an unindicted co-conspirator. And it followed them around wherever they went. So whenever, for example, somebody from CARE went to go speak about civil rights issues, discrimination cases, they were attacked with, aren't you guys an unindicted co-conspirator? And that's it. I mean, the credibility is shot. Thankfully, the Fifth Circuit has come down and issued a decision that said essentially that their due process rights were violated, that this list absolutely means nothing as far as criminal activity, and so on and so forth. But the damage has been done, and it was done for about 2 years before they made this decision public. And, you know, this is something that has had a chilling effect. It's going to make people think twice about whether or not they want to get involved in activist causes, whether it's an anti-war cause, whether it's a pro-Palestinian cause, whether it's even just standing up for domestic civil liberties issues like standing up against the Patriot Act, for example. It will make people think twice because they'll think, they have to ask themselves the question, if I engage in this activism, am I going to get targeted? Am I going to get hit with a subpoena? Am I going to get charged with something? And most people are not like you guys. Most people are not going to, in the face of that kind of fear, stand up against it anyway and say, I'm going to take this anyway. I'm going to stand up for my rights. The vast majority of Americans would sort of back off in the face of that sort of threat. And I'm just being frank here. What does that mean for the people in this room? That means that you have to work all the harder at getting your message out there and not giving up and seeing and understanding that all of these issues are tied together. That the rule book or the playbook that was being used during the Cold War era and against civil rights activists in the 60s is the same playbook that's being used today. And that means you know what you can expect, but that also means that you're facing a very difficult time ahead. And it's going to be a long time, and you understand that it's going to be a long time before you're going to see real change on the, you know, on the level of the masses, where the masses essentially see where you're coming from and adopt what you're saying. And this is sort of what we've all signed up for, I think, here. We understand that we are not the majority right now, but we're going to continue to work at what we're working at and picking away, and eventually we will see change happen. And the fact that they are taking these steps now means that they are taking you seriously. They're taking the Arab and Muslim communities seriously. They are afraid of what you can do. That's not to say that you've accomplished everything that you set out to accomplish yet. And that's why you've got to keep going and keep standing up for these things on principle and keep speaking to the people. Whenever you do what you do, you're not speaking to each other. We're not speaking to, you know, like-minded people. We're trying to get to the people who don't understand, but if they did understand, would side with us, right? So that's essentially been my experience in doing the work that I've been doing and seeing what I've been seeing. And I will also add that to this one final thought. I've had a lot of conversations with FBI agents in representing my clients. And a conversation that comes up frequently between me and them is, what exactly are they looking for? The line has become blurred, and they have admitted essentially to this, that the line between what kind of criminal activity that they're looking for and people's First Amendment rights has been completely blurred. And for them, that blur is sort of a good thing. It allows them to go and seek out, you know, start to pay extra close attention to people who espouse certain beliefs and who are active in certain areas, anti-war movement, for example, pro-Palestinian cause is another big thing. But the line is blurred. And that's what makes them think that it's okay to go and ask people, what's your opinion on this or what's your opinion on that? And for us, the First Amendment is sacred. It's something that it's a line that they can't cross, but they've been able to successfully blur it. And that's something that we have to de-blur, I guess, for lack of a better term. That's something that we have to re-establish our domain over. That this is something that this is a line that they can't cross. They've been crossing it. It's been crossed. It was crossed when they served the subpoenas. It was crossed when they raided offices. It was crossed when they knocked on some random guy's door and said, hey, we just want to get to know you guys. What do you think of George Bush? You're going to get tapped, man. You're going to get tapped. The line has been crossed, and we have to reestablish our domain over the First Amendment. So I'll leave you guys with that.